There's books out there that if I knew now what I knew then, and unless you're in it, you don't feel it. You know, I almost died twice, once on the operating table with my hysterectomy and once after my chemo. And I want to say it shook me up, but it didn't. It didn't give me any more thoughts of, I was already at peace with, okay, if I don't make it, I'm already at peace. Mm-hmm. So it didn't shake my world.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with DIY healthy lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer. Empowering you to transform your life one imperfect day at a time.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Fulmer. Today we have Deanna Schultz on the show. Deanna is the author and owner of the website One Step Woman. She is a breast cancer survivor as well as one who lives partially blind. Her passion is to inspire women to create their best lives at home, regardless of the obstacles that they have to overcome. She also shares DIYs, crafts, decor, and recipes from their super cute family farm in Northern Arizona. Here to share her inspiring story, Deanna Schultz. Good morning. I hear
you. Good morning. Can you see me?
Not yet.
Well, shoot. I'm not seeing anything shut off.
You might be able to change down where it says video. There might be an option to change which video feed.
You getting closer? No.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is so fun to have you. I enjoyed reading over your story more in your website and on your blog, One Step Woman, for everyone listening. And I love pressing the rewind button. You had mentioned that you were a business owner. You were running a business for quite some time.
Yeah, we actually owned two businesses in California.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I was a real estate broker and owned my own business. And my husband, he had worked for the city that we lived in. And when, you know, one of the recessions happened, he was laid off. So then he started his own home inspection, which is what his trade is. And so we ran two businesses until 2015, and I was kind of forced to close mine because I lost part of my eyesight.
Yeah, so, what a story. Ugh.
Yeah, it's been something. Yeah. But
now, how common is, despite being in medicine, I have no clue what the answer to this question is. Share a little bit about why you're partially blind. And then do you have any idea how common that experience is? Like the statistics,
it's actually not very common. Yeah,
I didn't think so.
My stepdad was on hospice and my mom had to have knee surgery. I was actually at boot camp, like an exercise class, doing boot camp and loving it. You know, my daughter was in college and we were, you know, running our businesses and empty nesters. And I came home and it just happened to be like when Clint Eastwood had gotten to his plane crash and it was at the bottom of the television screen, the banner.
Right. The little notification comes up and yeah.
And honestly, I thought they were playing with the fact that he was in an airplane. Don't ask me why. And it was very wavy. And the letters were on top of one another.
Like these newsrooms are getting real creative.
Why is the news channel making fun of this plane accident or this plane crash? So I asked my husband, he said, you know what? The screen is fine. And I said, no, it was red too. And I said, no, it's just so wavy and everything. And we had no idea that this kind of thing could happen. So he said, I think you're just tired. You've had a long day. You know, maybe just go to bed early and we'll see what happens tomorrow. So, you know, I went to bed early and everything, and I had to catch a flight to go back to Indiana and help my parents. And so I didn't think too much about it. But then when I got there, I had this rental car and I'm looking at all of these signs and they're wavy. And I'm like, oh boy, I've got to get there. You know, it was just, they kept overlapping. So anyways, as soon as I was done helping them and I flew back to California and it was getting worse. So I called.
She can't see and she's traveling. She's
Exactly, on a plane.
Like, what you do know? You do? Yeah.
And so I went into my ophthalmologist and mm-hmm. said, listen, you know, I'm having a problem seeing. Maybe I need new contacts. Mm. And he says, oh, no, you have a hole in your eye and your retina's detached.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, no. Like, there's no way I should have flown. I'm lucky to not mm-hmm. have lost my eyesight. Mm-hmm. So I got into the, he goes, you need to go right now. And so he got me an appointment. I went over there and they said, you know, we've got to do surgery as soon as possible so you don't lose your eye. Mm-hmm. So when they got in and scheduled me for surgery, my retina specialist was able to reattach my retina. And we thought that was going to work. Well, with retina surgery, they put an air ball or a gas ball behind basically your macular to try to keep it in place so that the stitches and, you know, whatever they've done, I'm not sure if they're stitches, but that it stays attached. And you have to lay face down for 55 minutes an hour, 24 hours a day for at least, for me, it was 14 days.
Wow.
So it was similar to kind of being in traction if you have back surgery.
Huh.
But I had to lay face down. They had these little specialty mirrors that you can watch TV. And it was really mind-boggling, but I did it because I didn't want anything to happen. I didn't want to lose my eyesight. So after the 14 days, I went in for my checkup, and the gas ball actually stays in your eye and it slowly shrinks, but it stays in for like 2 months. So I really didn't have a lot of eyesight. And he said, listen, you have myopic degeneration, which is different than macular degeneration in that it's genetic and your eye forms a football shape. Mm. And he said, the hole is not closing. Mm. So we have to schedule another surgery. Honestly, selfishly, I was like, dang it, I don't want to lay down for another 2 weeks. It's horrible.
I don't blame you at all. I was like, okay, my business is to run. And yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So they ended up doing another eye surgery. And of course, I couldn't drive. I couldn't drive for 2 years. So, you know, my husband drove me. I couldn't really see anything at the grocery store. And it was just around the time that they started the pickup, which was awesome. Mm. 'Cause I just ordered on the computer. And, you know, my husband got me a huge screen for the computer and things like that. But yeah, so they ended up not being able to close the hole. So I have a macular hole in my right eye. Mm. And then my left eye, they did surgery on it as well to try to reshape it back into a ball size so that the same thing didn't happen. So it was just kind of the luck of the draw that I have this and it forms that football shape until it detaches. So it wasn't like a physical activity that had the retina detached.
It's more of a genetic.
So, so it was at that time that I was like, okay, you know what? If I'm not able to drive for 2 years, I really need to close this part of the business. Mm-hmm. We worked out of our home. Luckily, it was low overhead for my husband's business. And I just jumped in with him and did the accounting and answered the calls and sent the reports. And it worked out well. I mean, I was so grateful that I didn't have to drive anywhere to work. So we did that for a while. And the recovery, you know, it was a while, but it overlapped with my last surgery was in February of 2016, and it was in April that I started having a lot of abdominal pain, severe, and they thought, well, it's probably your appendicitis, you know, your appendix. So I went in, and they couldn't find what was wrong, and I finally had to have exploratory surgery, and they said, listen, you have a tumor that has to be removed because we believe that it's precancerous. And so I went in for my surgery and ended up having to have a complete hysterectomy, and they were able to get all of the cancer. But fast forward literally 2 months, and I was moving my mom to California. My stepdad had passed away, and I had to have a hysterectomy. And literally when we're moving her from Indiana in October of 2016, that's when I found like a dimple or a dent in my breast after we were done moving when we were traveling back and went in the next day and found out that I had breast cancer. So it was like I dodged a bullet. I thought, oh my gosh, my eye surgeries, I'm adapting, which it is amazing how your body can react and adapt to something that's happening to you as far as my eyesight, because although my right eye is pretty useless, I still live a full life. I still started my blog, and I started I was actually just starting to share and fill my time and find something for me with my blog about the eyesight. And then who knows that all of these other things would happen as well. So I had a mammogram in April of 2016, and it was completely normal. And then October of 2016, I had breast cancer. It was already 4 centimeters. So
what stage were you when you were diagnosed? Do you remember?
When I was diagnosed, I was stage 2.
Yeah. Okay.
They thought, well, we'd had caught it. And I was so grateful because I was stage 1 for my ovarian cancer. It didn't require chemo. It didn't require, you know, they got it all with the surgery. And then it was stage 4, and they scheduled me for surgery. I had never experienced a relationship with anybody that had breast cancer. No one in my family had breast cancer. So I relied on the doctors, and I was so grateful because I went to City of Hope, and there's like a team there. You know, they really research and talk to one another every week about every case. So no matter what doctor or oncologist that I had, they really did guide me. They all knew my story. And I ended up having surgery 5 days before Christmas in 2016. And it was a double partial mastectomy and required like 400 stitches. And I'm going to be honest, I don't remember a lot from that time period. But to jump back, and 5 days after I had my hysterectomy, I was still in the hospital. And my dad died 5 days after.
This was like a year in the books. Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely.
Which is so, it happens all the time, I feel like. It's like when it rains, it pours.
It sure does. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really hard.
Anyway, and, go ahead. You know, his death is a suspicious death.
Oh, yeah, I was reading that on your website. You had so many. Yeah.
And so, you know, literally for 5 years now, they've been collecting evidence and trying to move forward. I can't talk too much about it, but it was very shocking for one to be in the hospital and find out your dad's dead, you know. And,
and it's so traumatizing to add on top of the idea that there's suspicion of revolving around a loved one's death. It like adds a whole layer of pain to the loss in the first place. So you're going through your own personal loss. Did you experience any sense of grieving when you lost some of your eyesight? Because I feel like that would have been a grieving process too. Okay, good.
Yeah, I really didn't. When I was told, hey, there's nothing that you did. This is just, I was very, very faithful. I know that things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
But I had the incredible support of my family. So it wasn't like I felt alone. It wasn't like I was completely blind, you know, and my husband was like, I like having you here every day. And we focus on this business. So we were very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah.
And it really did just keep doubling up. You know, when I found out I had breast cancer, it took the sting away from my dad's death. I knew that there was something suspicious that had happened. And I thought, I've got to set that aside and save my life at this point. How can I find out what happened to his life if I didn't live my own life?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the recovery was brutal for breast cancer. I had 13 rounds of chemo and I had 33 rounds of radiation. You know, I had the surgery, and the surgery, they literally started my chemo 2 months after my surgery. And, you know, your body really doesn't recover from surgery that quickly when you have 400 stitches.
Right.
And so it just was a constant state, I think, of numbness. But oddly enough, everything else kind of goes away. In the same time period, there were several friends that we had, and two of them died from breast cancer. And that just kind of stabbed me in the heart. I was like, what can I do to save myself?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of took a, of course, just like when you're having a baby, everybody has an opinion.
Oh, always.
On what
always.
You should do.
Yes.
You know, even if they've not had cancer, they're going to tell you what you should do.
Yeah.
So I kind of took a holistic approach. I listened to my doctors, you know, I prayed and I said, nothing else really matters. The relationship issues, they kind of lessen.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't getting into the little drama, the little, mm-hmm. like it just kind of went away.
Yeah, it's like when you have this sudden, you are faced in a very real way with the end of your life on this side of eternity. It is sort of a forced perspective shift. And it's like, so if you could answer this question for somebody, what advice would you give to somebody who may not be facing an imminent sense of end of life? You know what I mean? For those of us that don't, we're all dying. You know, yes. I always laughed. I didn't laugh, but inwardly when patients would ask me in the ER, am I going to die? I always wanted to say, well, yeah, we all are.
Like, yeah, we all.
We're all dying. Some of us is faster than others. And so we don't always have that opportunity to be faced with an end of life diagnosis or a terminal scenario, or, you know, you're driving a car and you almost get killed. And it does really shift your perspectives. But for those of us who aren't in that place, what advice would you have from your perspective for those of us who want to live life to the fullest and be able to glean from some of that worldview that you had and have? What advice would you give?
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I actually was very faithful and prayed, and that's not the answer that you're looking for. But when I was praying about this, it's using my head, I was saying, you know, just ignore all this noise and just live and try to survive. But I also, mm-hmm. I either read it or someone had told me that no matter what, you're going to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in that, honestly, I came to the conclusion of, if this is my time to die, I've got to be comfortable with it. I have mm-hmm. to deal with it. And it wasn't something that I consciously had to think about, but God is in the healing business, and mm-hmm. you're going to be healed on earth or on heaven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that actually gave me comfort, because I thought, no matter what, I'm not going to suffer,
mm-hmm.
but all this other stuff goes away. But, you know, there's books out there that if I knew now what I knew then, and you know, all this, unless you're in it, you don't feel it. Mm-hmm. And I almost died twice, once on the operating table with my hysterectomy, and once after my chemo. And I want to say it shook me up, but it didn't. It didn't give me any more thoughts of, I was already at peace with, okay, if I don't make it, I'm already at peace. So it didn't shake my world. It, excuse me, any more than finding out I had it or, you know, anything like that. But I would say, I want to say something insightful about that, but it just kind of comes over you that all of these other things don't matter as much in the scheme of things, because I was right there at the finish line going, okay, do I see more road ahead? Is this it? But I'm going to be perfectly honest when I say, after I was told I was in remission and you live your life, you go back to the little things matter, as in an argument, or you go back to feeling the same way. And I have to say, no, I didn't dwell in, is this the end for me and nothing else? No, I went back to, after the initial shock, and then you live your life, life goes on, and relationships still have hills and valleys, mm-hmm. and someone's going to upset you on the road, and mm-hmm. you know, somebody says something to you and upsets you, and you still have relationship problems and all of that. So it's not so insightful, except for when you're at the very end and you're like, am I going to get up tomorrow and say they didn't catch it? It's not treated, and you're, well, there's nothing more we could do for you. Mm-hmm. Or the other scenario was, you're going to be perfectly fine. So the night before I went into the doctor to find out if I was in remission, I'm literally laying on my bed going, which direction? Mm-hmm. It's not under my control.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and something that I hear that you haven't specifically said, but I'm hearing it just by the way that you communicate, is I also get the sense that you have very much approached life with gratitude. I mean, you've Absolutely. Mentioned the blessings in your life multiple times, and
right.
I think you have said a lot that is insightful, but I also think there's probably that element to it that you may not even be realizing that you're communicating, but I see gratitude in your words and in your life and the ability to pivot in those moments and right. do it with success, I think is probably stemmed from that sense of, well, I get to spend more time with my husband. I get to work from home. I get to fill in the blank. And so I also have so much respect for the way that you have also, it sounds like, consciously chosen to see right. the blessing in the burdens. And that's something I think we can all, myself included, take note of and figure out how we can do that in our own lives. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, stay tuned. We're going to play a speed round of This or That with Deanna, and we're going to dive a little bit more into her really fun website, her farm, and really just her expert advice from her own life of creating your best life, even when life throws you some pretty significant obstacles, right when we come back from this break.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all-natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy, and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
We are back here with Deanna. All right, this or that, 2 options, no stress, whatever comes to mind first. Would you rather garden with vegetables or flowers?
Flowers.
But what's your favorite flower?
All flowers, to be honest. Mm. Like, I like hydrangeas, I like sunflowers, but I'm actually building a flower garden or a cutting garden.
Oh, so fun.
My goal.
So do you have hydrangeas on your property?
I do. I have about 4 or 5 hydrangeas in the back because it's so shady. But yeah, we are in Arizona.
I was going to say, you guys are in Arizona, so very different. What is a really common flower to grow in Arizona? I don't even know.
Besides cactus?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're actually in northern Arizona. We're in between Flagstaff and Phoenix, which is two very different worlds in Arizona. Phoenix is so deathly hot, and Flagstaff gets snow for the bulk of the year. So we're kind of right in the middle, which isn't too bad. They're actually known for cotton, for growing cotton.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm not going to try it. I'm not
that's
a cotton
Deanna's farmer. Next life is going to be a cotton grower. Oh, that's so interesting. Huh. I could not have said that.
Yeah, cotton. Mm. So we can't grow citrus here, but it grows well in Phoenix because we have snow on the ground right now. And yeah.
Isn't that so fascinating? It's amazing. When we were considering moving to a different state, Arizona was one that came up because we wanted a warm weather like most of the year. But we still wanted a little bit of change in the winter. And Northern Arizona was one of the places that we looked at. And it was blowing our mind that there were places in Arizona that still got snow and were cold. I just ignorantly had I didn't know.
Yeah, we have all four seasons, but of course we have those monsoons.
Yeah.
So the month of July is a complete wash, literally. So, which is something I'd never experienced before with monsoons, and it just comes out of nowhere, dumps a bunch of rain, everything's washed out, and next thing you know, it's sun. So it's crazy.
It is crazy. It is really interesting. Would you rather read a Kindle or an old-fashioned book?
Old-fashioned book.
Do you have a favorite? What's the most favorite book that you've read?
Well, to be honest, I'm really into finance.
Okay.
That encourages me. So yeah. I do read some of my mom passes on these books. Her and her friends read these romance novels and they write their initials in the front and then she'll pass them on to me. And I think I have 10 of them to read, but I enjoy it. I just don't do it enough.
You're like, give me enough. A finance book, mom.
Exactly. Give me those and I'll read it. Right.
That's funny.
Oh. Yeah, I don't read enough, but if I do, I'd pick up. I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan.
Yeah.
When we were literally going through all of the closing my business and, running our other business, the thing that helped us out the most was being debt-free, which actually got us to the point where we could close our businesses in California and move to Arizona and start a small family farm. And I think we could not have done that if we had not been debt free. And the height of the market selling your house doesn't hurt either. But so that's what kind of it inspires me to try to live frugally. And it was quite an adjustment because when we were in California, I thought we lived frugally. But when we watched, but we could also, we were literally 5 minutes from a restaurant. We go out whenever we wanted. So we were not so stringent. But I think that was key for us. So I try to throw that in when I have conversations, like, especially we didn't know beforehand, but once you go through breast cancer, the expense of really that and the eye surgery is unbelievable. So I think that helped us relieve some of the stress from these events. So I always throw that in there, that being debt-free is helpful when these things happen in life
events. Yeah. I love that this is such a cool part of your story. And we'll talk a little bit about your farm here. I have so much respect when I hear couples in more of like a midlife season. You know, it's not like you have young kids and you're still sort of figuring out like, where are you going to settle? Where are you going to that forever home type of a concept? And you're willing to literally drop what you've known for how many years and pick up something brand new. I have so much respect for that. I think that is the coolest thing. So talk to us a little bit about your family farm. It's so cute. Y'all need to check it out. OneStepWoman.com. It's the cutest little farm. So what made you decide to go to a family farm in a midlife?
We have one daughter who's grown, and she was going to college at Northern Arizona University. And through all of this, my husband and I were really, without my mom, alone. Mm-hmm. As far as family, my dad had passed away. My father-in-law and my stepfather both had passed away within a year of my dad. So we lost all three of them. And so we kind of were longing for that connection with my daughter. And, you know, she graduated and she lived here and we were always coming here. And so after that season, my husband had also, he's 100% disabled veteran. And it was years and years and years of just getting him treatment for things. And he started to fall a lot off of his ladders and he was hitting his head. And they finally diagnosed him with muscular neuropathy. And so it's where it affects the nerves in your hands and feet. And that's what he did for a living, was use his hands and feet. So once they diagnosed him with that, we literally sat down and took stock of what was ultimately most important. And thankfully, we were debt free, except for our home. And we could sell the home, make a profit. And we thought, you know, honestly, are we going to die? And we didn't get to really let loose and start a new life, close that chapter, open a new one. My mom was on board. She's like, oh, no, you're not leaving me here by myself. So she had her own home. We sold it. We sold our house. And we sold a lot of our possessions. And we went. It was so hard to find a house. We were so not knowing where we were going to live. We knew that we wanted to live close to our daughter, Hannah. And we found a house that was on a piece of land. Of course, we were thinking, let's go buy at least 5 acres. Then we started thinking, what are we doing?
Who takes care of those 5 acres?
Exactly. We're not in a position physically to be taking care of all of this. So we scaled down. And we found this just blank piece of land, and builder had built a small farmhouse on it. We downsized about 1,000 square feet, but we were like, this is a fresh, like clear the slate. And so we bought it sight unseen. We just put the offer in, and within 20 minutes we'd signed the papers, and it was like, okay, this is a God wink for us. This is what we need to do.
Yeah.
We started doing our research on farms and things like this, and we wanted to leave something for our daughter. So it's 1.25 acres, and we just brought everything, pulled in, and oh, so this is our house. You know, of course we've seen pictures, but we're like, what are we going to do? So we pulled in, started moving in, and it was honestly not, it was not sunny days the first year. It was not sunny days. You know, it's a blank slate, which is great, but it's a learning. I mean, we're learning so much. You know, and now we, obviously we need help. And luckily we have neighbors that live behind us that we met on the very first day. And they were like, oh, great. They're moving from a cul-de-sac in California. What? Oh, great.
Right, right.
But from the very beginning, they were so helpful. Well, they'd lived in their house for 30 years and they're somewhat homesteaders. So they have chickens, goats, and all this. And we've never had a chicken. We've never, I've planted flowers, but I've never planted trees. So they literally are empty nesters, a little bit older than we are, and they have created this family farm of theirs that's, so anytime we need, had no idea on the chickens, seriously, we had no idea on.
So do you have chickens now?
We have chickens.
Cul-de-sac to chickens.
Yes, exactly. And we're growing nuts and fruit trees. And my husband, with a little bit of help from our family, we built a workshop and we're just getting our bearings. And my daughter said, hey, I'm getting married and we want to have the wedding in your backyard. And I'm like, no, there's nothing there. It's dirt rock.
You may not. Sorry. Do you have pictures of that on your website?
It's actually going up on Monday of the wedding. Oh, we had it October the 30th.
So fun.
We said, are you sure? And they're like, oh, yes. You know, we're absolutely sure.
Oh, that's so special, and though. So, like, what a cool. I mean, right there, let's just pause there. I love how you took a risk. You left. Could she have done that in your cul-de-sac house in California?
Absolutely not.
So let's just pause right there for a second, because I think this is an important thing to highlight. I love what you said. You took stock of your life, despite the fact that at the time you were relatively comfortable. And you said, okay, is this it? Or is there some, is there a dream we would still like to realize? And this is one of my favorite like story moments that needs to be pointed out, because I have a lot of women in a similar position in your life who listen to this podcast. And so I want you to hear right now what Deanna has just said. She and her husband took a risk. Like, the story wasn't over. She wasn't just going to like sit down and get comfortable. And she said, you know what? Forget midlife. Like, this is the beginning of the next chapter. And you can do that too. What is it that you want to see happen? Take some risks. And then because of that, her daughter gets to have this amazing experience in your backyard. Right. I think that is the coolest thing. Sorry, it had is, a moment there. I love that.
Honestly, I thought it was so challenging with the breast cancer. And believe me, it is. My husband's disability. All of these things happen. We were just normal people raising a family, going to PTA and living our life. Yeah, and then literally I had 10 surgeries in 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then this happened to my husband. And then 6 weeks after we moved in, my daughter got into an almost fatal car accident. She was T-boned and thrown into like a water well. And she was life flighted to Phoenix. And it was the same kind of revelation that I had after I was in that night trying to find out if I'm in remission or if I'm not going to live. Everything else just did not matter. And for us, it's an hour and a half drive, and we could not go into the helicopter, obviously, with her. Mm-hmm. So we drove, and it was very evident our personalities were really brought out, and that my husband said nothing. Even when I tried to talk to him, he said nothing. And I am just all over crying, all the feelings. And it was really the longest drive ever. And so we get to the hospital, and I had made the mistake, looking back, of calling and saying, I'm just checking on my daughter. Well, she's over 18. So they said they got somebody else on the line. Well, that in itself put me in a tizzy. And I said, why is somebody else getting on the line? So then the nurse got on the line, and she says, first of all, we're not going to have her name listed. She needs to remain anonymous, because she was hit by someone that they think was texting or drunk driving. And she's not listed under her own name. The social worker will come get you when you get here. Mm-hmm. And I lost it. So we get to the hospital, and her boyfriend at the time was behind us driving. And we get there, and I thought, they're going to tell us that she didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else doesn't matter. But truly, so she had a year of rehab.
Yeah.
But it's those moments that just keep happening and happening and happening. Mm-hmm. And I was very sad, but oddly enough, I was never depressed.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like this positivity light switch comes on to where you're like, truthfully, I didn't die. She didn't die.
Yeah.
My husband didn't die.
It's gratitude. Like, again, you're choosing gratitude. You're choosing to basically focus on, it could have been worse.
Yeah.
It sounds like such a negative thing to say. And yet the reality is, when you live in that mindset, it truly does change. You know, you come back to your farm then, and the struggles that existed seem a little less important, because you're like, my daughter's alive.
Right.
And then she got married. She
went on to a year later. Running a marathon. Like, that was her journey.
I love that.
And I learned a lot from her in that. And she goes, oh no, mom, I learned this from you. Like,
aww.
To keep going. And I thought, wow, you know, the wedding pressures were something for sure. But I was also just so grateful to be alive, that it does change your perspective a lot. I'm not wishing that on anybody to change, but it gets to the point in your life where you're like, at least I'm not dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you start living, and you really start living, and you really start living. And she went through her rehab, and I kind of put the blog on the back burner, because we just needed to focus on life. And so now, you know, the beginning of the year, I was like, okay, we're going to put our story out there more, not just of life on the farm, but it is a leap of faith to leave everything and start new.
Yeah.
And I was so grateful that if she was going to be in that position in her life, that we were close by. She literally lives 15 minutes, which is my ultimate dream in life, was for her to live 15. I wanted her to live next door. That didn't happen. But literally having our only child be so close, she ended up getting married. And now we are grandparents to a cute little 8-year-old boy because she married a single father. And so our life's feeling pretty complete.
Yeah.
And we got through it.
Yeah.
So
it's such a beautiful story. And it's a real life story. which is the reality is a lot of our stories. It's just like the gritty behind the scenes. It's not necessarily the like pretty highlighted reel that we see, right, you know, so frequently. And I love the fact that you're willing to share it and you're inspiring women to get out there and do the same. And we need more. We need more Deannas in the world to share their story. It's real, but you are living by faith and I think you're living fully, which is a beautiful thing. Where can people find you? Where can they follow you? We've mentioned your website, but just tell people where they can look for more. And these wedding pictures.
I'm always at One Step Woman. So on Instagram, Facebook, I'm starting a YouTube channel for life here on the farm. So everyone can see it doesn't just appear, because it is horrible digging in
that imagine.
Dirt.
A lot of work. Man, chickens alone. God bless you.
Chickens. But strangely enough, they don't in Arizona, or at least where we're at, they do not lay eggs in the winter, because we do have a winter, pretty heavy winter season. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We got these chickens we have to feed every day, and eggs are so expensive, and we don't even get to.
And we don't have the eggs. Oh, that is hilarious. Darn chickens.
Yeah.
Well, One Step Woman is where you need to go check out Deanna and follow along if her story resonates with you. Be encouraged. Your next chapter might be the best one yet. Live life fully. Yes. Deanna, I pray God's richest blessing over your heart, your home, your sweet family, your daughter and grandson. It's such an honor to have you here.
I appreciate you giving me the platform to tell my story. And I hope that I did encourage someone to take a leap of faith, but to also maybe put aside all of those little things that may not matter in the whole scheme of life, just because I've been through it. Let some of these things go so you can fully embrace your life and just try to find happiness.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth
it. Amen. It is worth it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts from today. Head to your preferred podcasting platform and give the show an honest review and let me know what you think. Remember, you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped one imperfect day at a time. Your story matters and you are loved.